Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride.
Monica Guglia Nuss is an associate professor in the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology at the University of Nevada, Reno. In the spring of 2025, she had a Fulbright and spent 3 months in Uruguay. Monica used her time to collaborate with colleagues around the study of ticks that affect the cattle population in Uruguay. In this episode, we talk about the impetus for applying for a Fulbright, how Monica managed her lab of 16 people while she was away, and how being away from home and her lab helped her reflect on her career and realign her work with her personal and professional priorities. If you're someone who runs a lab and you're wondering how you might be able to leave your lab during sabbatical, I think this episode will give you hope and some good ideas for how to make it happen. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, Monica. Thank you so much for being on the Sabbatical 101 podcast today.
Hi, Bethany. Thank you for the invitation.
So before we get started and hear about your Fulbright, I would love if you could just introduce yourself to our listeners, say a little bit about who you are, where you're located, and, you know, what field you're in.
Yeah, so my name is Monica Guglia Nuss. I am an associate professor in Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology at University of Nevada in Reno. I am a trained vector biologist, so my lab work on arthropod vectors and the pathogens that they carry, mostly mosquitoes and ticks. And so major focus of my lab is to understand the genomics and basic biology of ticks so we can develop new methods to control tick populations, either using genetic methods like gene drive or new vaccines for tick control.
Okay, great. And you just got back, pretty recently, you just got back from a three-month-long Fulbright in Uruguay. Tell me about it. What inspired you to apply for a Fulbright?
Yeah, so about 2 or 3 years ago, we were invited to write a book chapter on genetic control of ticks because there aren't very many tools. So that book chapter got published and everything. And the editor was working with my colleagues at INIA. It's kind of USDA equivalent in Uruguay. So he was working with them on screwworm fly, which is another pest of cattle. And the INIA colleagues were looking for somebody who works on ticks because ticks are one of the major pest problem in Uruguay, pretty much in whole South America, especially in Uruguay because their whole economy is based on cattle. And cattle fever tick is one of the major issue for their economy. And, you know, to put it in perspective, there are 3 million people in Uruguay and 8 million cattle. It's a huge industry, and the ticks make it really impossible for them to, once the cattle get infested with ticks, it's really hard to get rid of them. So they're looking for all different ways to control them. Right now, all we have is acaricides or insecticides, but the ticks are smart. They're developing resistance. So they were trying to find a collaborator who is working on genetics and gene drives, especially on ticks, because we don't really have very many people. Actually, my lab is the first in the world to develop genetic tools for ticks. So they reached out to us and we started talking about collaboration. They wanted me to get out and help them set up the lab, but you know how we are in academia, running the lab and being a parent of two elementary school children. It was really difficult for me to get out, but I sent my research scientist. He was there last year for a month and a half and helped set up the lab and everything, trained the people there. And then the Fulbright came and I thought, well, why not? I can apply for Fulbright. That will take me away from my administrative duties at least. Yeah. And I can spend more time just focusing on learning about this tick that I've never worked on. I work on the Lyme disease vector tick, the black-legged Ixodes scapularis. So this was something new and exciting and it worked out.
Well, that's amazing. And I have so many questions. You went into the Fulbright, you had an established relationship with a group there. And Fulbrights are obviously very competitive, but it probably helped that you had this collaboration and you had a very specific project to work on, and you knew that there was an established need for your expertise there.
Yes, so Fulbright, so every country has a different numbers of Fulbright that they give away, right? So in Uruguay, they give one Fulbright every year.
And oh, wow.
That's in agriculture, because agriculture is huge for them. And since cattle is a huge problem, so I think they picked my application. I met the Fulbright commissioner when I was there, and she was telling me that every Fulbright applications that she has seen that it's successfully granted has something to do with cattle, either infectious diseases, tick-borne diseases, ticks themselves, or surveillance, or other cattle health issues like veterinary-related. Okay. I guess it was just a good fit.
Oh, that's amazing. And you mentioned you have young kids and you have a partner, you told me in our previous conversation. So tell me a little bit about, I guess, just some of the logistics in terms of your family with you being away for 3 months.
So Fulbright gave me an option between 3 months and 4 months. I chose 3 months. Originally, I had chosen 4 months because we went back and forth about taking the kids with me and starting in fall, and so they can start the school there. Then we realized in Uruguay, school starts in March instead of August. The school year Wow. is different. So we thought about me starting my Fulbright in March so the kids can go to school at least 4 months and then come back here and go to the next school year in Sure. August in US. So yeah, we went through a lot of scenarios, and eventually we decided that, okay, I'll just go for 3 months and then kids will stay here with their dad. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the best we could, because my husband didn't want to leave his lab for that long either. And the kids didn't want to go to a new school in the middle of the school year and to the next grades. So they were a little hesitant of doing that because they were taking them in the next advanced grade. And they were like, we haven't finished this grade yet. So,
So
a lot of conversations and trying to figure out how we want to do it.
Yeah, it's so complicated to try to move a whole family for any period of time. And then when you don't have that alignment in the school calendars, it's hard. How old are your children, just for context?
They were 9 and 12 at the time.
Yeah, so also kind of old enough where they could still do it and they would have adjusted, but I'm sure they had feelings about leaving their friends and their activities and things
yeah,
like that.
Totally. Also, the whole Spanish thing was another issue because neither of them have been much exposed to a second language. So having a school that would be bilingual, more Spanish than English, I think they were a little hesitant that they would not be able to pick up.
Yeah, especially when you're only there for a shorter amount of time. We were worried for our kids when we went to France. We knew we would only be there for 4 or 5 months, and that's for kids who had no French, that's not a long time to give them. You know, I think by the time you get 4 or 5 months in, then you're maybe starting to feel comfortable. So you run a lab at your home institution. Tell me more about that, because I would imagine it's pretty complicated to leave a lab, and you're doing this work in Uruguay with collaborators, and then you're also trying to keep your lab running at home. So how did you negotiate?
My lab is pretty large right now, and I am at a position now after 9 years at this university that my lab kind of more self-sufficient. They don't need me for one-on-one all the time. So I have 4 research scientists. They are non-tenure track faculty positions here. I have 4 graduate students. 2 of them are pretty senior, and 2 just started last year, so I feel bad for them. I have a lab manager, and I had 5 graduate students last semester. 5 undergraduates, I'm sorry. So those undergraduates have been with me for a couple of semesters as well. So pretty much everybody was more established, except for 2 new graduate students. They were still learning their way. But having those senior people in the lab helped with all that, because they were able to take care of the graduate student projects. And then we continued doing our meetings, our weekly lab meetings via Zoom. And I had all my people had my cell phone number. I kept my US phone number, actually, so to make it easier. And they had they had my email, but just to be able to text me if there's something comes up quick and I can answer them. That helped a lot. So we stayed in touch. We met pretty regularly, I would say almost every day or every other day, but our more formal meetings were weekly meetings. So I think having senior people, when you start, for anybody else who is thinking about it, I think when you start feeling comfortable that the lab can run in your absence for at least a little bit, that's a good time to test it out, I guess.
Yeah. So if you have a postdoc or a senior scientist.
Any graduate student, maybe.
Yeah. Someone who can be there, because I would imagine it's just nice having someone there for the quick questions so you can be a little bit further away, because obviously there are also things that you're trying to accomplish in Uruguay and in the lab you were working in there.
Yeah, I think it was also nice for me because I used to do a lot of bench work when I was a new assistant professor. But as we grow in our positions, it becomes less and less on bench and more on the desk.
Supervision and writing grants, I'm sure.
Yes, exactly. It takes so much. And I'm also a graduate director, so that also takes time, all the graduate school stuff. Being back on bench in Uruguay was kind of making me think again, okay, yeah, things take time. I cannot be impatient.
Helping you be more patient with your students.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Reminds you. It makes you humble.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what was your day-to-day like in Uruguay? Were you in the lab every day at the bench? Were you out in the field? What kind of work was it?
Yeah, it was mostly in the lab. It was interesting because the Institute INEA is in a very small place close to a little bit bigger place. I was in Colonia del Sacramento. That was my home base. And then they had shuttles that will pick you up in the morning. So you have to be at the bus stop at 7 and then the bus will bring you back at 4. So your day is 7:30 to 3:30 kind of takes half hour. So in a way it was nice because here also I get to my office around 7 after dropping off the kids and I leave around 4, 4:30. So time-wise, it was pretty similar, but since Uruguay is 5 hours ahead of U.S. time, I had more time to work because I will start my day early, and then when I come back home, it's still just 11 here in U.S., and I still have the whole day to work with my lab.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was mostly in the lab doing experiments or training people in different techniques that we are using here, meetings with people there. We also did a 2-day-long workshop to teach other veterinary folks and researchers whoever wanted to learn more about tick genetics. So we offered that workshop. That was pretty fun. And then I did actually get out in the fields to collect some ticks and meet the ranchers and farmers to talk about what's the actual problem. It's just for my own understanding of how big this problem is with tick resistance and what they are doing and how can we help in the future.
Yeah. And a couple things come to mind. The first is, so do you feel like you were working kind of 2 work days? Because I've done this where I do research in Tanzania, and sometimes I'll have, like, I was on a search committee and I was in Tanzania for a week, and I would have my day in Tanzania, and then I would have my search committee meetings in the evening, you know, and it can be a lot too.
Yes, no, many times felt like that because, as I said, when I come back home at 4, it will be 11. Back home on West Coast, so I will then start working with my lab people or departmental duties. You know, as a grad director, there's always something, some issues or other.
Yeah.
And then my lab is 16 people, not including me now. So somebody always have some questions working with them, or try to work on manuscripts and grant proposal that I wanted to do for a long time, but we're just sitting there waiting for time. So yeah, it does feel like a long day or 2 days.
When you think about the Fulbright time, what do you think worked really well in terms of keeping the lab running? And it also sounds like you had a little space to be in a different kind of role that might have been energizing or revitalizing in some way.
Yeah, I think, as I said, I really enjoyed, I have always enjoyed being on bench and doing things with my own hands and running my own experiments. That always makes me happy. Even here when I'm busy, I keep my bench space and I do some experiments sometimes, but that gets smaller and smaller period of time. I think what really helped, one of the things with Fulbright is since you have to write a proposal, you already know what you want to do, what your objectives are, and what you want to accomplish. Of course, as scientists, we want to accomplish too much more than we actually can in the given time. So keeping those expectations in check was kind of important as well. That, okay, it's only 3 months. And out of that 3 months, I'm going to take some time off and my family comes over. So I really have like 2.5 months. What can I actually do in this 2.5 months that's helpful, not for just us, but our collaborators as well. And, more kind of doing the groundwork so that they can continue working on it after I leave. So having that kind of objectives in mind, that what we want to accomplish with this 2.5 months period was important. And keeping it, in touch with my lab back and forth and what they are doing and how we can test that. But what we are doing in black-legged tick, can I try this? Can you send me materials so I can try it in here in this tick? So I think that back and forth conversation helped a lot as well.
Yeah. Will you continue this collaboration with the folks in Uruguay? Like, is this feeding into the work that you're doing in your lab too?
Yeah, we already got funded for the grant proposal that we wrote together with the Uruguayan collaborators. It's a Uruguayan funding, so it doesn't come, any money doesn't come to the US, but we have this bilateral now collaboration where they can come to my lab to learn new techniques, or they can invite us fully paid through the grant to stay there for a couple of weeks to help them out with experiments if things are not working as fast as we would like them to be, or bring our whatever we develop, new techniques in black-legged tick, we can take it back there to the cattle fever tick.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, congratulations. I mean, that sounds like a really fruitful, that's kind of, I think, the dream of what Fulbrights are for, right? That they seed these collaborations. That sounds really exciting. So you mentioned that your family came to spend a little bit of time with you. Did you guys get to do anything fun? I mean, I love traveling. So I'm just like, ooh, tell me good stories about the fun things you did in Uruguay.
The Fulbright is, in a way, is nice because they have the very set standards of everything. So like on your 3 months fellowship, you can take 2 weeks off. And if you want to take more time off, you have to, talk with your hosts if they're okay with that. I had my 2 weeks off that I planned when my family came over. They came over for 3 weeks because the kids had 2 weeks of spring break and we added one more week to it. So first, I just wanted them to enjoy the small town of Colonia. It's a beach town. It's beautiful. It's historical. Nice Spanish Portuguese architecture. Very walkable. So they just loved being on the beach every day because we live in Reno. The beach is at least half hour to go. And so they were just right at the beach there. So really enjoyed it. And then we took a trip to Atacama Desert. I know, from desert to desert. I guess we just love deserts. That was really fun. I mean, the geography is just so amazing. One day you are, in the desert and it's hot, and the next day you are in your ski gear at 14,000 feet.
Wow.
It was just absolutely amazing. And then we stopped in Iguazu Falls towards the Brazilian side and got to see the beautiful falls and spent a little bit of time in Argentina. So I think we got to do quite a bit of diverse things. And really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And the kids got to see the ticks and work with us because they've been working with us since they were born. So they know what to do in the lab.
That's amazing. I love it. My kids love going to lab with my husband and they have such great questions and think about things that I never would have thought about at their age, just because they've been exposed to, an actual scientist doing science. It's really
cool.
How
old are your kids?
They are 7 and 11.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and they frequently, my daughter was just the star student. She's 7. She's in first grade. And she has always said up until now that she wants to be an artist when she grows up. But on her star student poster, she said a scientist. And so maybe she'll be a scientist and an artist. It is yet unknown.
Yeah. Well, no, that's with my kids too. My daughter just turned 10. And for a long time, she wanted to be a veterinarian. But then our cat got sick and she realized that that's not a lot of fun because veterinarians mostly see the sick animals. So now she wants to be a chemist. So we will see.
There you go. She still has a little bit of time to decide, but good ideas. So as you think about how things went during your Fulbright, is there anything that you would do differently in the future?
Yeah, I think it took me a while to dial down my expectations of what I can achieve in 2.5 months. So I think that would be my biggest thing, will be to go with the expectations that, okay, you know, we want to get at least something done, not everything on my list probably. So not to beat myself to say, oh, I didn't get this done. So yeah, I think other than that, everything else went pretty well. My hosts were wonderful, and I don't think I would change much. Maybe just my own expectations a little. That's hard being a scientist, right?
It's so hard. I think it's the typical trope of academics. We always think we can accomplish more than we can. And then I think when you add this extra layer of, you know, you're going to a different institution in a different country with a different culture a different culture of higher education. So there are a lot of little things that you're navigating. It's not like, oh, I'll just walk into lab and start doing bench work the way that you would at home.
Totally. I think I annoyed my hosts a lot in the beginning, the first week, because I was like, I'm here at 7:30. Yes, let's go. What are we doing today? Or this is my list of things I want to accomplish this week. And they're like, just slow down.
They're like, let's have some coffee. Let's chat a little bit.
I'll sit down, have mate. And I was like, but we need to do all this.
The first
week was a little rushed. And then I was like, okay, we can still accomplish whatever I want to and not make it a huge deal.
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing work in Tanzania for 20 years now. And I think what I've learned is, like, the more I try to push my agenda, the less likelihood of success. And so there is a kind of, okay, I just have to, I'm going to follow other people's lead. And it takes a little time to adapt and adjust and ease our way into it.
No, I totally agree, because I had the kind of similar experience. So my hosts were both in Montevideo, which is the capital of Uruguay, and they had their offices over there. And in Colonia and Inia, they had their research team, but they would only come once a week.
Mm.
So I was like, okay, so I have my own experiments planned. It's okay. I don't need to talk to them. But, you know, sometimes they won't show up on the day they were supposed to be. And their team knows, but they wouldn't tell me that they're not coming. And here I am thinking about, okay, we can talk about this and this meeting. And so then I realized that's how things work. Everybody's on their WhatsApp. This is a WhatsApp group thing. So either I join the WhatsApp or I just ask, what's going on today? Are people coming or not?
Yeah.
So it's this different. Well, although I'm from India, I did my higher education in India, where it's a somewhat similar culture. But I've been here for 20 years and I've forgotten relearning.
Yeah, for sure. But it's also a good reminder, I think, sometimes that we can slow down the pace and still accomplish things, and that there's importance and or value to making time for the relational aspects of our work too.
Exactly.
So my last question for you, Monica, is what advice do you have for fellow scientists who are running a lab and may be thinking about going away, either just for a research leave on a Fulbright like you did, or for their sabbatical?
I haven't taken a sabbatical yet, but I would like to take one. I think it's really important to, you know, it gives you time to reflect on your own science, on, you know, work you are doing. And, you know, I would say rest and rejuvenate, although it's not much resting, but definitely rejuvenation and, you know, seeing world with and even your own research from a different set of eyes is really helpful. At least that's how I felt. I think I really needed the break, because I've been just for the last 9 years going and haven't really had time to just sit back and see, okay, where do I take, which direction I want to take my research to. And the sabbatical or this Fulbright really gave me the opportunity to reflect on my own research and what's important and what's not, what I really value, what projects I can, you know, I'm not super excited about, and I can just let them go. Have my people, if they want to continue them, it's up to them. But what is really I want to achieve next is, kind of reflecting on my science and life in general as well. I want to spend more time with the children. I don't want to be, this doing 60 hours a week anymore. And how do we achieve that in a time that we have during the day, and making the collaborations and just seeing how other people do science, good science, but still relaxed atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So if anybody's thinking about it, I would say if you feel like you are kind of burned out and it's been a lot and you're doing the same thing every day, maybe it's time to take that little break and do your work in a different environment for a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's something about changing your environment that prompts some reflection because you're able, I do ethnographic research, so I'm in the field of anthropology, and anthropology is all about making the familiar strange. And there's something about like when I'm in Tanzania and in a very different cultural context and visiting schools and noticing things that are happening, I can think differently about things happening in the US context or reflect differently. Even just seeing higher ed in Tanzania makes me think differently about my experience in higher ed in the US. And so I think going away like you did, it just naturally prompts this reflection. And I love what you said about, I feel like this is what I say ad nauseum, the importance of just really taking a little time to evaluate, like, where am I? What am I doing? Which projects am I enjoying? Which ones do I need to let go? And we don't have to keep doing everything just because we started it. I think sometimes there's the sunk cost fallacy. Well, I've already been working on this for 3 years. How could I possibly give it up now? But I do think that if we want to have more sustainable and joyful careers as academics, there is a need for these moments of pause and reflection. And it's so great that you got that through your Fulbright. And maybe you'll get that through a sabbatical in the future too.
Yeah, someday.
Okay, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Monica. It's been so great to hear about your experience on your Fulbright. And I hope that continues to shape your work moving forward.
Thank you.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.